This is a Human Potential podcast. My name is Oliver Freer, and today my guest is Rod N. Santomassimo. Rod, you're a best-selling author, consultant, coach, speaker, innovator. By combining your own experience with the development of groundbreaking tools, you've become the preeminent educator in commercial real estate. Your clients and readers' results are a testament to your pioneering and effective coaching system. Your new book, Commercial Real Estate Teams Built to Dominate, and your previous book, Commercial Real Estate Brokers Who Dominate, are number one bestsellers of real estate sales books on Amazon.com. I understand that Commercial Real Estate Brokers Who Dominate has been 2 years in the writing and nearly 30 years in the making, the culmination of your successful commercial real estate career as a broker, owner, and manager. You founded the Massimo Group in 2008 to provide a formal program of personal coaching to commercial real estate brokers of all levels of experience. The program, now administered by a team of 25 leading industry coaches, combines the firm's proprietary diagnostic platform and tools with private instruction to help professionals enhance and increase their business. You have recently developed and introduced the private Massimo mobile app that works exclusively with the diagnostic goal and pipeline tools to help your clients track their progress and goals. The firm's clients include representatives from a majority of the most successful companies in the business, including CBRE, Colliers, Cushman & Wakefield, Knight Frank, JLL, to name a few. You earned a Master's of Business Administration from Fuqua School of Business, Duke University in Durham, North Carolina. You also earned a Bachelor of Arts in Commerce from Washington and Lee University in Lexington, Virginia. You're a two-time recipient of the Duke University Fuqua School of Business Impact Alumni of the Year Award based on your work with both graduate students and alumni in building a personal brand and creative approaches to secure greater client and prospect opportunities. Rod Santomassimo, welcome to the Human Potential Podcast.
Well, Oliver, it's really a thrill of mine to be on your podcast. I can't thank you enough for reaching out to us and allowing us to be one of your guests.
Fantastic. And look, Rod, my first question to you is, how did you get started? You know, way back before you qualified, what really made you head into the direction of real estate?
Well, I head into the direction of real estate. I guess it was a family business. My father was first an architect and evolved into becoming a representative for various owners in commercial space. And during my high school years, my jobs all evolved around commercial real estate as a gopher, you know, frankly. And then during college, more gopher work, painter, commercial buildings. And then even in my grad years, my internships had to do now more with research and database collection in regards to commercial tenants and properties. So I guess I was raised in that arena. Although I will share with you, Oliver, when I went off to grad school, I vividly remember telling my father, "Dad, I will never, ever work in commercial real estate." So.
You changed your mind. And I know one of your passions is personal productivity. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
You know, I have some pet peeves, no doubt, when people tell me they're too busy. It kind of drives me crazy because it tells me they're really not in command of their personal time, their personal space, and their lives. And I've always tried to work beyond working as hard as possible, which I admit I still do. I try to work as smart as possible so I can create more margin in my life. And more importantly, I would think more margin in our clients' lives. So it's all about productivity. In fact, when we start working with a client, the first thing we work with is their personal productivity.
Yeah. And you also talk about natural behaviors for success. Is that tied in with that personal productivity? What do you mean by that?
Well, natural behaviors, as I'm sure you're aware, there's so many assessments, especially here in the U.S., that you can complete in regards to your natural behaviors, your skill sets, and the like, from the DISC and others to what we call an AVA assessment, which is a like all assessments, they're two-dimensional. So it's a two-dimensional assessment based on four verticals that we look at to understand how to best work with you. And those four verticals happen to be assertiveness, lower assertive, higher assertive, which is not the same as aggressive, very important. Sociability, right? Are you introvert? Are you a wild and crazy guy? Where do you fit in that spectrum? Your level of calmness. Calmness is, are you impatient? Most folks in the commercial real estate community tend to be impatient. Are you more, certainly have a higher level of calm about you? And finally, your conformity, which has more to do with how you are structured and how you look at structure, how you appreciate structure, how you implement it in your life. So those are the four variables we look at. Again, from a scale of 1 to 10, it has to be equal to 20. That's how most assessments work. And we look at that in a variety of ways. How we can get the most out of you when working with you, absolutely critical. Where we see the challenges. So if we see someone, for example, Oliver, who is a low assessment, low social, guess what? They're going to have a hard time finding business. They're going to have a hard time prospecting. They just are. They're going to have a hard time in being challenged to express their personality and point of presence and personal marketing. So natural behaviors tell us so much in how to work with someone. And as I really explored my second book, it really helps us understand how to craft a team and assemble a team around the roles and responsibilities aligned with those natural behaviors in regards to productivity of the team.
Just going back to that, you mentioned one of those traits, the sociability versus the introvertedness. I mean, a classic picture of the real estate broker, the agent, the outgoing guy. Are you able to assist those guys that are slightly more on the introverted scale, or do you say?
No, everyone, well, everyone
should be on another part of the team.
Well, everyone, Oliver, regardless of their level of sociability or other factors, can be put in position to be more productive. They can be. That shares us what we need to do. But we have found, and this thing you'd find interesting, your audience interesting, this is not just commercial real estate, but we look at just that vertical, that when you look at the top producers in regards to, yes, money, production, that in that format, the top producers tend to be medium social and not necessarily high social, right? Because high social would necessarily mean that they're creating such a marketing presence that they're not out there actually asking for the business. So that's what we look at when we look at sociability.
Okay, interesting. And you touched up there on teaming. Again, commercial real estate can be very much an individual broker type environment. Do you see the teaming as an important aspect or not so much for the major producers?
No. In fact, when I wrote my first book, Brokers Who Dominate, we identified these eight traits that the acronym DOMINATE actually stands for. And the T in DOMINATE was team. Having a team is essential today. It's paramount. Now, whether that be an integrated team, right, that's more formalized, or a scalable team that you reach out to certain skill sets as you need them. Regardless, having a team is the differentiator today. And the days of, especially in commercial real estate, the days of the solo practitioner thinking I can do everything, you cannot compete in today's marketplace.
Yeah. And in terms of prospecting, has prospecting changed significantly from, the days of being handed the phone book and being told to just get on the phone and start dialing?
I wish, and it has, don't get me wrong, it has. But I still do hear of clients and brokerage firms across North America who say, here's a list, go start dialing, or go on the internet today versus the yellow pages back when I was doing it and go find a group. But no, absolutely. Everything we look at, in fact, we have a two-day workshop that we do throughout North America that's always been successful. It's all about creating your own personal prospecting playbook. And components of that playbook, yes, you need to identify your perfect client, the ideal client, who you're going after, the message you're going to do, the value proposition, yes, what their needs are. But then it's all about how to craft that in a campaign, not just calls, although calls are paramount, I will never say don't use a phone. It won't be out of my, at least not today. Maybe 10 years from now when the technology truly changes, perhaps. But right now, phone still is a paramount piece. But it's all about a campaign and creating an envelope around your calls, whether that be with letters, social media, other presence perspectives that really align and makes a difference for production.
And in terms of your own production and your, and where you're going with the company, well, probably just to go back a bit, I mean, you've been a broker. What was it that made you set this training company up?
Well, actually, an interesting story. Here in the U.S., of course, we had this little event called the Great Recession of 2008. And at that time, I was actually, I've always either gone from entrepreneur, my own company doing something, or then moving towards an employment-based role. And I was never comfortable in an employment-based role. But at this particular time in 2005, 6, 7, I was working for a national, international, in fact, brokerage firm in the management side and escalated extremely well up to the higher ranks. But then when the market turned, I was given the opportunity to transition out. Let's put it that way. I was downsized. And so I went home and I went about a week within. I had some opportunities with other firms, but I really decided I will never, and I meant this, I will never again work for anyone else. I will always work for myself and create my own company and align myself with people who want to work for themselves. So most of my people here, Oliver, are very few employees, a lot of independent contractors that form my company. But it was probably a week after the transition that and this is just the only time it's ever happened in my life, I actually went to sleep and I woke up and I had a dream that I was going to start a coaching company to assist people through the recession and help them survive. Now, if you asked me back then, 10, 11 years ago, did I ever think I'd have hundreds of clients, 2 best-selling books, 25 coaches? No, the dream was just to help a few people through the recession. So it's evolved since then. But yes, Oliver, corny or not, it all started with a dream. It did.
It's amazing, amazing. And just, you know, you have written 2 books. Just for the aspiring authors listening, talk us through that process of actually putting a book together, getting it published, getting it marketed, getting it sold. How did that go for you?
Yeah, and understand, I had never written a book. I mean, obviously, everyone has to have a first book, right? Everyone's got to have a first book. So when I start this quest to write a book, I was absolutely clueless on what to do. I thought if you wrote a book, the rest would fall into place. No, that's not the case. So writing the book was not the biggest challenge, it turned out to be. Yes, it took the most time, but then I had to educate myself and align myself with people who had done it before and how to get the book out to market, how to take a book that's on a Word doc or a Google doc and turn that into an attractive manuscript that you could then put out to publish. You know, of course, today's different today. You could self-publish and sell books all day long. It's actually pretty easy to do. In fact, Amazon will go in right today. All our books have converted from hard copy to paperback, and every book we sell today is printed on demand by Amazon and sold by Amazon. We don't do anything anymore.
Wow.
But to get to that process, you have to, look, find any author you know. That's the first thing. People you know are authors. They may not be best-selling authors, that's okay. Just find someone you know that wrote a book and ask them, who do you use for your cover? Who do you use for your editing? Who did you use for your formatting? Who do you use to convert to a Kindle? No, just help us who you use. Google, Google, Google. I'm sorry, it works. Google works to teach you how to do things differently. So do those things. Learn. I invested hours upon hours figuring out how to do certain things. And then I aligned myself with some really good people that had done it before. And I invested in myself by investing in them to get the book to market. Now, with all that said, that was really a lot of fun. But now, Oliver, I'm actually in the throes of my third book, which is definitely my biggest project I would have ever taken on. It's not focused on just on commercial real estate, but actually on general sales, independent workers, independent contractors, small business owners. And so this one is I'm thrilled about. I'm just thrilled about it, but we're just in the first quarter of the process. And my goal is to have it done And I've written the book already. So imagine that for your aspiring authors. The book's already written, but we're still in the first quarter because now I have to reposition, rephrase, look at the marketplace again, get it out there, get it published, figure out who I want to publish, if myself or somebody else, figure out a launch date, figure out a marketing campaign behind that, social media, aligning with influencers, getting endorsements. Now the work really starts.
So that whole process from the initial concept to a book on the shelf or on Amazon, how long generally has that taken you for your two books to date and for the one you're doing now, do you think?
Yeah, the first book was definitely about 2 years, absolutely. The second book I figured out, you learn, was probably about 18 months. This third book will probably be 12 to 15 months, all said and done. Now, you absolutely, everyone out there, there are absolutely fantastic ghostwriters that you can align with that won't write your book for you, but will take your messaging and craft it to a more readable format. Don't be ashamed of using a ghostwriter. I'll tell you straight out. I use a ghostwriter in both of my first two books, and I'll most likely you're going to use a ghostwriter in my third book. I'll write most of it, but I want someone to craft it in a better, more readable fashion and help me understand how to craft my message so it's a more attractive product.
Yeah, great advice. And from your own personal point of view, whether it's in your broking business, now your training business, your authoring, what is a particular habit or routine that has contributed to your success?
I know this is old fashioned and people say, yeah, I've heard that a million times, but this does work. And my team knows this. And that's what I love about my team. If I was successful before I get to that one trait, one of the thing alignment that my success is I hire great people, or I align myself with people that are better than me in every aspect of what I need, better than me in social media, better than me in editing, better than me in operating. And I pay them because they're better than me. And I recognize that. And that's why we've grown as much as we have. But I will say that they all recognize I don't mind losing money. I know that's shocking, but I don't mind losing money. To me, that's failure. And I don't mind failing. Because if I'm failing, I'm learning. And I know people say, I don't mind losing money because I know I will make up a lot more money when I learn the lesson I need to learn. So for example, right now we are evaluating, my team is rolling their eyes when I say this, I'm evaluating starting a media company just target for commercial real estate because I figured out how to craft messaging through a lot of failure, a lot of money wasted. I figured out how to get a message out if you're a commercial real estate broker in today's marketplace with today's tools. I think I can start a media company with the right people. So Oliver, fail as much as you possibly can. Don't lose all your money, but fail as much as you possibly can and you will succeed exponentially.
Yeah, and I guess following on from that theme, is there a particular story amongst your successes where you've had a major failure and what have you learned from that?
Yeah, I think there are two. And one's commercial real estate related and one's a business I started that failed miserably and I learned why I failed. I'll give you the latter one first. I've always thought about creating businesses and I always go after a passion I'm doing. So at one time, although I still work out as best as I can, at one time I was a fitness fanatic. I just loved the idea of working out and being fit. And so I thought to myself, and I understand this is now we're talking about 15 years ago, I wanted to create the world's first workout watch that would track your weight routines, your running routines. There was nothing on the market and I wanted to create it. And I knew nothing about watches. So what did I do? I found a partner who knew engineering. We found a watch and we actually created and patented the world's first workout watch. And we were actually sitting in the headquarters up in Connecticut in the United States of Timex, a worldwide watch manufacturer, yeah, and pitching our watch. And they said this would never work, which of course, we know now, yes, it would. But the mistake I made was I didn't know it then. I didn't really know how to market. I knew how to, what I wanted. I knew how to create something. The internet was just coming around. I had no idea how to market myself or a product. and therefore it failed, and it failed. We lost a lot of money, but it failed. But the lesson I learned was, number one, I could do anything I set my mind out to. Look, I have a patent for a watch, of all people, me. It's kind of hysterical. And number two, look, you're going to make mistakes. Marketing also is a big mistake of mine, and I share this story. The first ever marketing campaign for the Massimo Group, now granted, the Great Recession hits, no one's going to be able to afford coaching. So I got to go out there strong, launch this business. And I write a campaign that basically says, if you retain the Massimo Group, your business will soar. And we had graphics behind it, you know, soaring this, soaring that. Of course, I spelt soar, S-O-U-R, which of course spells sour. So, but I was on my own. I didn't have a marketing firm. And we put it out there for the whole world to see. And the scary part was we got calls. People call us. they thought it meant sore. So,
they couldn't spell either.
So the point is, you're going to fail. We make mistakes. Every day I make mistakes. I'm sure I made a mistake today. And it doesn't bother me because we just keep on moving forward.
Yeah, excellent. Excellent. Look, you must have sat down with thousands of successful and struggling brokers and agents. The real estate world is changing, technology is changing. What do you think the main challenges are with that?
I think there are two. Number one is, unlike residential real estate, commercial real estate has always been very slow to adapt to technology. They just are. There's still, look, in the U.S. at least, it's still a male-dominated good old boys network. It's sad but true. It is. And we're actually trying to change things at the Massimo Group by putting our services out to women, minorities, and so forth. But it just is. So they're going to do ways they've always done. Can't teach an old dog new tricks. That's part of the process. Also comes to investment. You have to invest in yourself and invest in technology. You know, generally the brokerage community tends to be, well, I don't want to use the word cheap, but let's just say they are more frugal with their own personal money. They'd rather spend it on a round of golf or a new car versus investing in their own business, which is why they're stagnant and not growing. So I think that's one issue. It's really hard to adapt in technology, but the problem is going to be technology is shifting the marketplace today. It already is. There are already companies that aren't replacing brokers, but certainly creating other substitutes for some services brokers used to provide all the time. Mm. So what's going to happen is, and I do believe this, what's going to happen is the brokers community is going to continue to depreciate in size. And ultimately the commercial real estate broker has to be and can position himself as an advisor. And I know some firms call themselves advisors. That's not what I'm talking about. I mean, they truly have to understand the marketplace, leverage technology, and be an advisor consultant versus just doing transactions, because that's going to be replaced in as little as 5 to 10 years. It's going to be.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, I have heard, speaking to a number of people, that the more information that's available, the quicker things are moving, the more important that trust becomes. And that old school trust, the old school ways of doing things in a way, it just seems to be becoming more and more important, because there is so much information on the net that you need to wade through to find those people you can trust.
I couldn't agree with you more. And trust is a key factor, and to build that trust is what we also coach. But to build that trust within your community, within your influencers, within your client base, to be consistently be there and give value constantly versus asking for business is a key component of that. As you build your trust, you have to be a resource. You know, Oliver, one thing we always quiz people on is when I ask someone, so for example, Oliver, and I know you're not a real estate broker, so I'll ask you and your answer will be different. But if I asked you, sir, how's the market right now? What would you tell me? How's the market? What would you tell me?
I would tell you that it's currently a commercial tenants market. Oh, sorry, it's an owner's market. Very little space available. And that's probably the from an occupier's point of view, that's the main part of the market at the moment.
Okay, I will tell you, you answered that question better than 90% of brokers. You do. You absolutely did. And here's why. Generally, you ask the question, how's the market? The reply you get is all adjective-based. It's great. It's hot. It's slow. It's fast. And the problem with that is, what the heck does that mean? I have no idea. I from your perspective, you don't know what fast is. I don't know. And no matter what business you're in, by the way, this is a key element we've learned from our clients who learned it and then share with us and we share with our clients. When someone asks you how are things going or how's the market or whatever it might be, even if you're a financial advisor, how's the market? Wow, unbelievable, the last 2 weeks. What the heck does that mean? I don't know. When you ask someone who really understands and is a resource and advisor how the market is, similar to your answer, Oliver, so I congratulate you, they'll share with you a perspective of, well, let's say you're an owner user, you're an owner or a tenant. Right now, the velocity and tenant base is this, the square footage prices are that, the absorption rates are this in the marketplace, vacancy rates are that, tenant improvements are this. And they'll give you, within 15 seconds, a perspective of, oh, I see what you're talking about. And more importantly, you understand it and you get it. And guess what? Next time I need someone that I know, like, and trust, I'm going to probably hire you or at least talk to you versus the guy who says hot, slow, fast. That means nothing. So I would really challenge your audience, no matter what they're doing, whether they're a dentist or a lawyer or a financial advisor or a broker, you have to articulate that question as best you can because that's your time to shine. And more times than not, you drop the ball.
Yeah, and I think in days gone by, the sales training was very much tell everyone you're very busy, tell everyone the market's fantastic, be up, up, up. Rather than giving facts and figures, it was, yeah, everything's great, because of that old classic selling routine.
And I heard, I never mind sharing, I listen to other coaches all the time because I want to hear what they're saying, what they're suggesting. And then we have a residential coach who's very popular here in the U.S. called Tom Ferry. So I listened to some Tom Ferry stuff, and he actually had a session on this, which everyone has a session on this. But he had something interesting. When someone asks you that question, respond with the words, "It depends. What's your interest? What's your perspective?" And let that person tell you, "Well, I'm only asking because I'm thinking of buying, thinking of selling, thinking of investing, thinking of." Restructuring my company, whatever their perspective is, then you can answer the question based on their perspective. And then you become a resource to them, the advisor, build trust. That's how it all works.
Yeah. I mean, it's still very much, it is a people business, no matter where the internet's taking us, no matter where technology is taking us, it still remains to be a people business where you're solving problems.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
And a series of questions on this, bit more personal questions. From your own perspective, if I got a group of your friends around and I asked them, what is Rob's greatest strength? What do you think they might say?
Wow, that's an interesting question. From my friend's perspective, what's the Rob's greatest strength? Dependable. That's what they would tell you, dependable. If someone's going to be the designated driver, it's going to be me. That's just the way it works. if someone's going to do the right thing, it's going to be me. So, yeah, I'm the dependable one.
Well, that's pretty good. And what's the best advice that you've ever received? It might have been from a coach. It might have been from your father, mother, an uncle, a mentor. What's the best life advice that you've received?
Oh, it's definitely my father, without a doubt. My father, since I remember vividly when I was, I don't think I was even a teenager. Maybe I was 9 or 10. He sat us down in the family. He worked for a bank as an architect. And he told us, hey, guys, I got some scary news. When everyone understand, I'm going to quit my job. I'm going to start working for myself. And then we had no idea what that meant. What does that mean, work for yourself? Who pays you? How does that work? And so what he shared with us was the only way he can truly grow to where he wants to get to is create his own thing. Now, my father was always a solopreneur. He never built a company. He just worked for himself and he was a consultant, a well-paid consultant. But that's when you started to do. And he always, every time I went back to the employment side of the world, he'd tell me, I'm making a mistake. Get back to do what you need to do and get back and work for yourself every single time. And the final time I did it 11 years ago, he sadly he passed unexpectedly a couple of years back, but he did tell me before then, look, this is what you're meant to be doing. This is it. Always remember, no matter how hard it gets, you're going to be times you're going to quit. There's going to be times you're going to say, we got to get a job. Now, fortunately, I can honestly say that's never quite hit us yet. I mean, we've had 10 years of a good run. But he always tells me, always work for yourself. You'll never be happier than just doing that. And he's right. I've never been happier than where I am today.
Yeah, interesting. And so you've worked for yourself. You've gone back into work for someone else for a couple of times. You're writing a book at the moment on, you know, how to work for yourself, be independent. And it's very much getting to that, what we call over here, the gig economy. What is the challenge? What do you see as the major challenges about working for yourself compared to being an employee?
Oh, I think it's twofold. They're probably related. Number one, it's lonely. I mean, it can be very lonely if you work out of your house, for example, which is the trends are working. It can be lonely unless you're working every day with someone. I mean, for example, I know we're doing a Zoom call right now. I've had 8 Zoom calls today, so I'm not lonely. I'm seeing people all day long. We're actually in a recruiting mode right now for more coaches. So that's what I've been doing all day. So for some people, it'd be very lonely. Now, the beautiful thing is, now to combat that, today we have WeWork and these community office environments that's, you know, taking over. And that's a beautiful thing to do. Number two, you've got to be, and this is where I would say, same with that being dependable, you've got to be disciplined to be successful. You know, the going to the refrigerator, hey, let's go binge on Netflix, let's watch a little YouTube. All those are out the door. There's a best-selling author, Adam Grant, who I highly recommend to anybody. He was a Wharton School of Business professor of the year, like 5 years running. He wrote a book called Independent Agent. And in that book, he talks about this struggle of truly being successful on your own. And the fact that though you hate your boss provides something you never recognize, and that's structure. Some people need structure. I know people very well who, when they're working for somebody, they excel. And when they work for themselves, they just fail. They need someone to hold them accountable, to hold the structure. So now that's a little bit what we do in our coaching, obviously, but the boss and the employer for others is exactly what they need.
Absolutely. I know you mentioned two key words there, that discipline and structure. So do you think then that being an independent operator is not right for everyone, or do you think that they can be trained in the discipline and work through a structure to be able to do it?
Well, we've now coached thousands of commercial real estate brokers who are also independent workers, independent contractors. I could say it is not for everybody. It's just simply not. You know, could you be an average producer? Absolutely. That you can be an average producer. Could you excel without the discipline structure? Absolutely not. You cannot. Unless you build a team around you to support that lifestyle. But discipline is number one. You've got to be disciplined. You've got to get to the passion to go to work every day and say, hey, this is fun. You know, yesterday here in the United States, yesterday was President's Day. I mean, it's a national holiday. So I questioned everybody, okay, who's working today? Because I had a call at 7:45 in the morning with our top producing client. This client personally makes on any given year between $10 and $20 million a year. But it's a holiday. It's a holiday. He's in the office at 7:45. He's working. I'm in the office. I'm working. Now, are we working because we need to work? No, we're working because we love what we do. And so I asked for a poll out on Facebook, okay, who's working? And most people said, working, this is what I do. I love doing this. That's what you need to be to really understand working for myself. Is it a passion? Because if it's a passion, it's not work. If it's work, it becomes stress. If you're going to be stressed, go get a job and get paid.
Exactly. So do you then, following on from that, help any of your clients find that passion, or is that just something they've either got or they don't have?
No, we I don't know if we can help them find the passion, although people do come to us and say, I don't have it anymore. Can we try to, you know, recapture it? Yeah, let's try. Let's try some things and see if we can figure it out. More times than not, unfortunately, Oliver, it's not going to happen. It's just not. But the people that come to us, they recognize, look, why does someone come to a coach? There are really two reasons. A, they're stuck and they need to just get unstuck. They need to figure out, okay, I got to reposition, I got to do things differently. What got me here won't get me there. Okay. Or B, they're so successful, they're so productive in the world of money, but they're not productive in the world of life. They have no margin. They just, if they don't work, they feel they're going to fail. So they need to find the balance. They need to create margin in their life. And so they come to us too. Those are the clients. So they have passion, but if they can find the passion, we have to find it sometimes to figure that out for them.
Yeah. Okay. And you mentioned Adam Grant and the Independent Agent book. Any other books that you recommend other than your own, of course?
Yeah, I got to tell you, I love Jeb Blount. I think Jeb Blount is probably one of the best sales writers I've ever read, Fanatical Prospecting. I love that book.
What's his name? Jeb
Blount, B-L-O-U-N-T. If you're in sales, love the book Fanatical Prospecting, and his probably more popular book is Sales EQ. Love that book, really a key one. But probably my favorite book of all time, and if you're an independent worker, if you're an entrepreneur, I would say my favorite book of all time has to be the most staple book there is, and that is The E-Myth Revisited by Michael Gerber. You know, yeah. I can read that book every single year and get something new out of it. And it's probably one of the few books, I like to read a lot, I do. And so my goal in reading, this is just true of every book, if I can get one sentence out of that book that will change my life, change my career, the book is worth the investment of time and money. Absolutely. For example, in the book Hyper Sales Growth by Jack Daly, good book, I enjoyed it. One sentence changed everything. And that one sentence was this, because I know it by heart. It was, if you don't have an admin, you are one. If you don't have an admin, you are one. 9 words. If you don't have an admin, you are one. Very simply translated, if you're truly out there working on your own and for yourself and no help, no assistance, you're doing $10 an hour work. You are. So stop it. Just create a team around you, pay them much less than your worth, and overall your value and your income will rise. So that's an example of how I look at books. But Michael Gerber's book, I mean, it's just a pile of notes now today, his book. I love that book.
Yeah, and that book is essentially for any entrepreneur, isn't it?
Anyone, any entrepreneur.
Yeah. And is there anything that we would be surprised to hear that you do in your spare time when you're not working?
Well, you're down there, down under, and you know the sport. My favorite thing to do is just, this is my favorite thing to do, even at my age now of 55, is still throw on a helmet, some gloves, and some pads, and go play a game of lacrosse. That is by far my favorite thing to do. I played in high school and college and post-college, and even today I play in the Masters tournaments. I just came back from one last month. If I had my druthers, I would coach half the time, and the rest of the time I'd travel the country playing in lacrosse tournaments. That's all I do.
Well, you don't appear to have too many head injuries. I thought you might.
No, I've been fortunate. Both my concussions happened when I was in high school, so I may be a little slow based on that, but no, I can still at my age kind of run away from people.
Yeah. And what keeps you awake at night?
You know, unfortunately, I'm one of those guys that takes work home with them. And when I always think of how I could do better. How can I do better? How can I do better? And then I listen to probably the world's, and I wonder if you heard of him. I'm curious if you heard of him. probably the world's most popular marketing maverick today is a gentleman who I actually invested last month and went to go see. Me and 10 people sat down with him. Gary Vaynerchuk, Gary V.
Yeah,
you know who he is?
Gary V. Yeah, he's very well known.
Yep. So I spent the day with Gary V and his team for clarity on where we're going from a media standpoint. And I got the clarity. It was worth the significant investment. But he poses the question, what can you do to put yourself out of business? Because if you can put yourself out of business, your competition can. So constantly be thinking, if I was to put myself out, if I was a competitor, here's what I do to beat me. So there goes back to reference. Maybe I need a media company. Maybe I need to do things. And actually, back again, I get coached by a lot. You know, I'm a coach who gets coached by a lot of people. I have a strategic coach. I belong to an organization that does strategy coaching. I have a fitness coach. I have a nutritional coach. So I believe in coaching. I do. But one of my coaches basically said just the other day, Rod, stop thinking what you can do differently and start thinking of what you can do different. And the point was, do different things. Don't do what you do differently. And it made a lot of sense to me because we will continue. Look, I just share with you that brokerage is going to dissolve in a matter of 5 to 10 years. I run the largest commercial real estate brokerage coaching company in North America. That's not a good equation for success. It just isn't. So that's what keeps me up at night. Not what's going to happen tomorrow, what sales were like last week or last month, but where are we going to be in 2 years, 5 years, 10 years? That's what keeps me up. I'm constantly thinking, how do we reinvent ourselves? What can we do different? Differently, no. Different, yes. To continue this Massimo group.
Mm. And leading on from that, what scares you?
No doubt. Look, commercial real estate is so dependent on the economy. And we know for a fact when the recession comes next, which we're all projecting in 2020, I mean, that seems to be the end of the run. Look, what's the first thing people are going to do? They're going to hoard the cash. They're going to say, I can't afford coaching anymore. And we're going to lose a significant number of our clients. We will. I know that. So that scares me, that alone. But because of that, I know it's going to happen already, Oliver. What I do because of that is, so I tell my sales guys and I build our sales team. So this year, all I'm doing is focusing on nothing but sales. So we can go, when we do drop and we will lose maybe half our clients, maybe more. But when that happens, that will happen from a much higher level of client interaction than it is today. So let's say today we have around 500 and so clients. Let's say a year from now, I have 700, 800 clients. Well, if the market does do what I expect it to do, we'll be in a pretty good position regardless of how many clients we lose.
Mm. And that idea, and I've heard a few authors and pundits talk about 2020 being the next recession. Where are you getting that information from? Why do you believe that is the case?
Well, I read a lot. I watch a lot of blogs. I watch economic news. First of all, I'm sure it's true with you. Everyone's been saying this is the year that the market's going to crash. Every year for the last 10 years, this has been the year the market's going to crash, right? And certainly in the United States, we started off in a really, let's say, historically poor January as far as the stock market's concerned. But it didn't impact the real estate market as much. It's all based on what our Fed does, what our monetary policy, how that's created in here, and how that impacts real estate from a lending perspective and a banking perspective. So I get this from just reading a lot of newsletters. And also I retained one of the industry's leading consultants in that field to tell us what's going on. So I get it through reading. I get through investing in smarter people than me.
Yeah. Okay. And now you've got a lot of coaches and advisors. Who is the most influential person in your life?
Wow. That's a great question. the most influential person in my life, this is going to be really corny, continues to be my father. It continues to be my father. I know the principles he led his life, and I try to lead my life that way. So I would say, without a doubt, the most influential person in my life is my father. As far as people I depend on for today's information, I don't have someone I'd say look, I love Gary Vee. I really love Gary Vee. I love what he talks about from a marketing perspective. But now he's talking about parenting, and he's talking about this and that. I'm not going to follow that. It's just not what I'm going to do. It's not, he's an expert there. I follow certain experts. I follow Chris Lee in industry trends in commercial real estate in the United States, because he has his finger on the pulse. A guy like he's an international guy, Dan Sullivan, from an entrepreneurial perspective. I like his stuff. I really like what he does from that perspective. So I like Michael Hyatt. I think what he's doing is from an entrepreneurial perspective is unique in how he's building things. Ryan Dice. Ryan Dice is phenomenal from a digital marketing perspective. You got to follow him. Ryan Dice is really good, really strong. So as you see, I look at different things that will impact my company. Trends.
Yeah, but I guess also like your company, like you take specialists in certain areas and rely on those specialists to give you that specialist advice.
That's exactly what I do.
Yeah, yeah. And a couple of questions I asked at the end. If you could pick up a magic telephone and call the 20-year-old Rod Santomassimo, what advice would you give him now, knowing what you've known over your career and various changes? What advice would you give that young man?
That's a great question. 20 years old, I'd be a sophomore in college in a little private school down in Virginia playing lacrosse. What would I tell that kid? I'd probably tell that kid first to transfer colleges. No, I'd probably tell that kid, figure out what, you know what? Start reading the Wall Street Journal. That's what I tell that kid. Had no idea what the Wall Street Journal was. Watch the Wall Street Journal, watch trends, and just figure out where you fit and where you can help. That'd be what I tell them. Where can you fit, where you can help? And it would lean towards working for yourself, obviously, but where can you fit? Where can you help? You got to find the passion. I mean, I no doubt when I first left grad school, I hated my first job. And I fell in love with my second job. It was commercial real estate. So you got to find the passion. That was it. You know, just watch the trends and figure out where you fit. That's what I tell them. And I know this is a Gary Vaynerchuk one, but I do agree. He's right. For all those kids out there, 20, 30, 40 years old, patience. Patience is so important. Look, I didn't start the Massimo Group till I was 45 years old. 45 years old. I mean, that's in the back half of someone's career and life, right? So, you know, here I am thinking, okay, what's the next 20, 30 years of Massimo going to look like when I'm 75 and 85? Because I'm so excited. So patience is a virtue. It really is.
So that's fantastic advice, particularly in the very fast-paced world we're living in at the moment. Have some patience. So, Rod, it's been fantastic having a chat with you. I really appreciate you taking time out. I know you're going from one Zoom call to the next, and you've got all your business to attend to, so I appreciate your time. Thank you for joining the Human Potential Podcast, and hopefully we'll connect again soon.
Well, Oliver, again, I can't thank you enough for allowing me one of your guests. I will tell you, we're in talks right now with a couple of firms in Australia to do a tour. We don't quite get the dates down, but if, in fact, that comes to fruition, you'll be one of the first people I call. I would love to shake your hand.
Fantastic. I look forward to that. And if you need any information on Australia before you get here, just let me know.
I certainly shall. Sure. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Rod.